ليس البر أن تولوا وجوهكم قبل المشرق والمغرب ولكن البر من آمن بالله واليوم الآخر والملائكة والكتاب والنبيين وآتى المال على حبه ذوي القربى واليتامى والمساكين وابن السبيل والسائلين وفي الرقاب وأقام الصلاة وآتى الزكاة والموفون بعهدهم إذا عاهدوا والصابرين في البأساء والضراء وحين البأس أولئك الذين صدقوا وأولئك هم المتقون.
Righteousness is not turning your faces towards the east or towards the west. True righteousness consists in believing in Allah and the last day, the angels, the book, and the prophets, and in giving away one's property in love of Him to one's kinsmen, the orphans, the poor, and the wayfarer, and to those who ask for help, and in freeing the necks of slaves, and in establishing prayer, and dispensing the purifying alms, zakah. True righteousness is attained by those who are faithful to their promise once they have made it, and by those who remain steadfast in adversity and affliction, and at the time of battle between truth and falsehood. Such are the truthful ones, such are the God-fearing. Righteousness is not turning your faces towards the east or towards the west. Turning one's face towards the east or the west is mentioned here only by way of illustration. The actual purpose of the verse is to emphasize that the observance of certain outward religious rites, the performance of certain formal religious acts out of conformism, and the manifestation of certain familiar forms of piety do not constitute that essential righteousness which alone carries weight with God and earns His recognition and approval.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم القصاص في القتلى الحر بالحر والعبد بالعبد والأنثى بالأنثى فمن عفي له من أخيه شيء فاتباع بالمعروف وأداء إليه بإحسان ذلك تخفيف من ربكم ورحمة فمن اعتدى بعد ذلك فله عذاب أليم.
Believers, retribution is prescribed for you in cases of killing. If a free man is guilty, then the free man. If a slave is guilty, then the slave. If a female is guilty, then the female. But if something of a murderer's guilt is remitted by his brother, this should be adhered to in fairness, and payment be made in a goodly manner. This is an alleviation and a mercy from your Lord, and for him who transgresses after that, there is a painful chastisement. Believers, retribution is prescribed for you in cases of killing. Retribution, that is, blood revenge, is based on the principle that what a person has done to others ought to be done to him. This does not mean that the murderer should be put to death in exactly the same manner as he killed, but that the murderer should be subjected to the same act, for instance, killing, as that to which he subjected his victim. If a slave is guilty, then the slave. If a female is guilty, then the female. In pre-Islamic Arabia, people tried to take blood revenge upon the murderer's family and tribe, and the retaliation corresponded to the value placed on the blood of the victim. Their desire for revenge was not quenched merely by putting the murderer to death. They preferred to put to death tens and even hundreds of people to avenge the one life they had lost. If a respected member of their tribe was killed by an ordinary member of another, it was not deemed enough to put to death the actual murderer. They preferred to kill a man of the murderer's tribe equal in standing to the victim, and even several members of the murderer's tribe. However, if the victim was a man of humble standing from another tribe, and the murderer from their tribe happened to be a man of high standing, they were unwilling to permit the execution of the murderer. This attitude is not confined to the ignorance of that bygone age. Even today, those nations that are supposedly the most civilized will often proclaim officially and quite brazenly that if one of their citizens is killed, they will execute scores of the killer's compatriots. In addition, we often hear that to avenge the murder of one person, a large number of hostages belonging to the subject nation have been shot dead. One of the civilized nations of the present century subjected the whole Egyptian nation to blood revenge because one of their officials, Sir Lee Stack, was killed by an Egyptian. The courts of justice of these so-called civilized nations have been known to refrain from passing the death sentence on convicted homicides when they happen to be members of the ruling nation, while their victims belong to the subject nation. It is iniquities such as these that God seeks to end by means of the directive contained in this verse. What God says here is that the killer ought to be put to death, irrespective of his status and that of the victim. But if something of a murderer's guilt is remitted by his brother. The very use of the word brother in this context suggests that as a general rule, one ought to incline towards leniency. Despite the bitterness felt towards someone who has shed the blood of, say, one's father, the murderer is still one's brother by virtue of being a member of the human family. Hence, if one who has been wronged can overcome the vengeful spirit aroused by his erring brother's deeds, this attitude of forgiveness will be worthy of his humanity. This verse also makes it clear that according to the Islamic penal law, the question of homicide can be settled by the mutual consent of the two parties. It is the prerogative of the heirs of the victim to forgive the murderer, and if it is exercised, not even a judge has the power to insist on carrying out the death sentence. In such a case, however, as the following verse mentions, the murderer will be made to pay blood money. This should be adhered to in fairness. The term maruf occurs quite frequently in the Quran. It refers to conduct which is reckoned fair and equitable by the generality of disinterested people. The generally accepted usages and customs of life are called urf and maruf in Islamic terminology, and they are considered valid in all those matters not specifically regulated by the Sharia. And for him who transgresses after that, excess might consist of trying to avenge the blood of the murdered man even after his heirs have settled the matter and received blood money, or of efforts on the part of the murderer to delay the payment of blood money, thus repaying the heirs of the victim with ingratitude for their kindness and goodwill.
وَلَكُمْ فِي الْقِصَاصِ حَيَاةٌ يَا أُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ
Men of understanding, there is life for you in retribution, that you may guard yourselves against violating the law. Men of understanding, there is life for you in retribution. This refutes another notion of ignorance, a notion ingrained in the minds of many people both past and present. On the one hand, there are some people who, entrenched in ignorance, tend to exceed the limits of moderation in revenge. At the other end of the spectrum stand those who are opposed in principle to the concept of executing a murderer. They have conducted such intense worldwide propaganda against the death penalty that it has become abhorrent to many people. In fact, the impact of this propaganda has been so great that in many countries, the death penalty has been abolished altogether. The Quran, however, addresses itself on this question to wise and intelligent people and cautions them against such immoderate leniency by proclaiming that the survival of human society rests on the application of the death penalty for homicide. A society which holds inviolable the lives of those who disregard the sanctity of human life is in fact rearing snakes and serpents. To save the life of one murderer is to risk the lives of many innocent human beings.
كُتِبَ عَلَيْكُمْ إِذَا حَضَرَ أَحَدَكُمُ الْمَوْتُ إِن تَرَكَ خَيْرًا الْوَصِيَّةُ لِلْوَالِدَيْنِ وَالْأَقْرَبِينَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ الْخُوفِ حَقًّا عَلَى الْمُتَّقِينَ.
It is decreed that when death approaches, those of you who leave behind property shall bequeath equitably to parents and kinsmen. This is an obligation on the God-fearing.
This is an obligation on the God-fearing. This injunction relates to a period of time when no rules had been laid down for the distribution of inheritance. Thus, everyone was required to make testamentary disposal of their property, so as to ensure that no disputes arose in the family and no legitimate claimant to inheritance was deprived of his due share. Later, when God revealed a set of laws regarding the distribution of inheritance, see Quran 4:11, the Prophet elucidated further the laws relating to testamentary disposition and inheritance by expounding two rules. First, that no person can make any will regarding his estate in favor of any of his legal heirs. Their portions were laid down in the Quran, and neither increase nor decrease in this was permissible, nor could any heir be disinherited, nor anything willed in favor of any heir over and above his legal portion. Second, that testamentary disposition might be made to the extent of 1/3 of the estate, but no more. The purpose underlying these explanatory directives of the Prophet seems to be that at least 2/3 of the estate should be left aside to be distributed among the legal heirs according to the Quranic rules, and that a will could be made in respect of the whole or part of the remaining 1/3. This could be made in favor of either relatives, whether close or distant, who are not legal heirs, or others not related by the blood tie, but who are deserving of assistance. Likewise, a will could be made in favor of charitable causes which are found worthy of support. In later times, people began to regard this directive regarding testamentary disposal as a recommendation only. The result was that this rule fell largely into disuse. It is significant, however, that the Quran mentions it as an obligation on the God-fearing. Were Muslims to make this injunction an operative institution, no trace would remain of the problems which agitate their minds respecting the Islamic law of inheritance. For example, grandchildren whose parents had predeceased their paternal or maternal grandparents and who under Islamic law were not entitled to inherit from their grandparents.
The author suggests that reactivating the Quranic directive on testamentary disposal is the answer to this and similar problems.
فَمَن بَدَّلَهُ بَعْدَمَا سَمِعَهُ فَإِنَّمَا إِثْمُهُ عَلَى الَّذِينَ يُبَدِّلُونَهُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ.
Then, if anyone alters the will after hearing it, this sin shall be upon them who alter. Surely, Allah is all hearing, all knowing.
فَمَنْ خَافَ مِنْ مُوصٍ جَنَفًا أَوْ إِثْمًا فَأَصْلَحَ بَيْنَهُمْ فَلَا إِثْمَ عَلَيْهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورٌ رَّحِيمٌ.
He who suspects that the testator has committed an error or injustice and then brings about a settlement among the parties concerned incurs no sin. Surely, Allah is much forgiving, most compassionate.